into the data, into the details, into the nuts and bolts of the business, because things, as you say, things are changing weekly in these categories. Brands are cropping up weekly in these categories, so we're always on top of the data.
I'm your host, Dave Knox, and this is Predicting the Turn, a show that helps business leaders meet their industry's inevitable disruption head on.
Welcome to another episode of Predicting the Turn. Today, we sit down with Paul Basford, who is the USA President and Managing Director for William Grant & Sons. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. Great to be here. Appreciate the time.
Looking forward to the conversation.
Me too. So
with that in mind, let's start with the William Grant & Sons story. What's really the kind of quick version of the company's history that got you to where we are today?
Yeah, sure.
I wish there was a quick story, but I'll try and keep it brief. There's so much to say. There's so much fascinating, innovative, and pioneering storytelling through the last 137 years of the business and its business foundation. So William Grant & Sons was founded in 1887. William Grant, the original William Grant, basically had 9 sons and daughters, and he decided in 1887 he was going to build a distillery in a valley called the Valley of the Deer in Speyside, Scotland. Valley of the Deer means it's translated into Glenfiddich. And so in December 1887, Glenfiddich was born as a brand on December the 25th. The first liquids flowed from the stills on Christmas Day 1887. It had been a tale and toil of lots of hard work, and you can imagine building a distillery from scratch in 1887 didn't come easily. His 9 sons and daughters were actively involved in doing that. And effectively after 1887, almost on the same site, William Grant then decided in 1892 he would not had enough with just building one distillery and built a second one in Balvenie in 1892. So Balvenie, which is our second brand and our second historic brand, Balvenie means village of luck, was built in 1892. So sat more or less parallel on the same site in Speyside in a place called Dufftown are the Glenfiddich and Balvenie distilleries, which is where they've been since 1887. The company is a 5th-generation, independent, always family-run, always family-owned manufacturer and distributor of alcoholic spirits. And basically, it's a company that's been a pioneer in innovation, a pioneer in creating categories. Glenfiddich first created the single malt category in the US in the 1960s. Balvenie is renowned for its innovation and its dedication to craft in how it's produced. The two brands have effectively just been the bedrock of our business. And from that point, we've expanded our portfolio over time. Hendrick's Gin came in 1999, Milagro Tequila soon after, and then we acquired Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey, Baker Vodka, and many more came as part of our innovation or acquisition process, to a point where we now have around 20 global brands of pretty high distinction, all very heavily invested against. And that really keeps our business base very strong. We have almost a brand for every single category and every single occasion that a consumer might want around the world. But premium nature, they are not value or mainstream type products. They are premium, ultra premium, super premium in their orientations. I guess that's all come about by lots of pioneering owners, lots of people that have taken risks, lots of people that have remained true to the fact that Glenfiddich and Balvenie are the base of our business and always be the base of our business. And that's a deep family belief, as it should be. And then we've expanded and innovated into the spaces that have been right at that time. It's a fascinating journey, and there's hours and hours of reading and historic photos you can go through. But we are where we are today in the US, and the US is effectively 35% of the group business. And I obviously run the US and the US market. We go to market through several distributors across the country. And the portfolio is doing very well because of its premium nature. So that's the potted history, Dave, if that helps.
Thinking about those two brands that really were bedrock for 100 years of history, how have those foundational brands informed the choices that you've made as you've moved into adjacent categories to scotch and other new innovations?
Yeah, sure.
The two brands, are the bedrock of our business. We have a single malt first kind of plan that drives those two brands forward. And actually, they're great brands. They're very resilient brands. And you can imagine that being around since 1887 and 1892, respectively, they have to have something that's pretty special to be enduring today. Their quality, it shines through. It shows how good they are, the length of time they've been around. Their commitment to quality, the craftsmanship. Obviously, over the 137 years, you have to be innovative. You have to renovate. You have to keep your brands relevant. So we've been really pushing the portfolio forward on a basis of building single malts and single malts innovation, whether that's in cask, finishing, whether that's in age profile or whether that's in packaging. We do some great things on keeping those relevant. So they have really been looked after. We do lots of gifting. This year, we've got a great Grand Chateau 32-year-old Glenfiddich that's finished in Bordeaux wine casks, which creates something completely different with great art. Who is one of the great internationally acclaimed artists, has helped us with the packaging. So you have to be modern in your orientation, despite your very traditional base. First answer is we innovate and keep those two brands very relevant. And then we have a very strong priority order in terms of how we approach the brands. We have obviously a very strong super premium gin in Hendrick's, which leads the category with over 60% share. Hendrick's is a fabulous brand, very creative, very different in its orientation. And we've added to the portfolio, we have a tequila called Milagro. Milagro will, in the next 12 months, hit almost 1 million cases. It will become our biggest brand by volume in our portfolio. It's a tremendous story. The growth of tequila you probably know about, but the growth in Milagro has been fantastic. And we've just created household names and category leaders as we've gone through time. And we're able to manage and juggle those together whilst bringing in new innovation. And obviously that relies on a great team across the world, but also particularly a great team in the US and great distributors in the US, which has meant that we have grown our business to be 35% of the group. And it really, those distributors help us with our prioritization, and they follow our prioritization very strongly. And the other great thing is, as a business and being around for so long, we have a long history and a deep knowledge of this industry. And we have deep stocks of products, aging stocks of whiskey particularly, that allow us to produce exceptional luxury products with different finishes. We just have the base product to be able to innovate against. So I think the answer is we invest heavily behind the brands, we prioritize appropriately, yet we don't shy away from innovation where there's the opportunity. And that's how we've approached it. And that's why we have such a wide range of 20 brands globally that we celebrate and invest heavily against. And it's sometimes a juggle, but ultimately we always go back to single malts, and we always go to Hendrick's, we always go to Milagro and Tullamore Dew. They're our big five. And then we'll look to innovate around the sides. We recently bought a brand called Silent Pool, which is an ultra-premium gin from the Surrey Hills, just south of London. It's a great oriented gin. It's got hints of honey. It's got a great kind of local and regional story behind it. And we bought that in because we believe that the gin market is starting to flourish above Hendrick's in the ultra-premium price. So we brought that in as an innovation brand now that's in our control versus being independently owned. So we're always looking at those next trends in the portfolio that can disrupt the spirits market.
So when you're leading a house of brands, you know, one of the debates that you always have is, do you double down on the brands that you have and expand them within their space, or do you bring in other brands to play in that category?
Right.
How do you think about that mix between in these different spirit categories, whether it's tequila or gin, or when do you expand a brand versus when do you bring in a new player to the category? Mm.
No, it's a great question, and it is literally the everyday juggle of what do we do and how do we do it. Luckily, I think we have opportunity in our own brands and our core brands to be able to say we don't need necessarily to have innovation in our portfolio. We have an amazing strength in our core with lots of opportunity. Hendrick's still has opportunity. The single malts have a lot of opportunity. And I think a lot of the decision on innovation is guided by the market and where the consumer is going. We're currently in a place where consumption of all alcoholic categories are down. Obviously, they were going to be down post-COVID, and we're normalizing post-COVID with people clearly not drinking as they did during COVID. So we, as a company, are doubling down on core brands. At that time when, you know, the market's tough and things are not like they used to be during COVID, we double down. So we are effectively not looking at too much innovation right now. We're looking at interesting spaces around. Non-alc is a very interesting space right now because of some consumption patterns. But we are looking at entrenching, fortifying, reinvesting against our core base. When things open up, I think innovation comes as part of that. But for now, we're focusing on the core, making sure we have the core that can do the job for us in these lower consumption times. We're fortunate that our portfolio plays into the part of the market that is doing well at the moment. When people are drinking now, even though they're not drinking as much, particularly the Gen Zennials, they're drinking better. So they're drinking better quality, they're drinking better price points. That plays exactly into the William Grant portfolio, which is why we have the conviction just to double down on the existing portfolio.
With that in mind, you know, you mentioned that the US is about 35% of William Grant overall sales. How's the portfolio mix change in the US versus other markets as you think about going to market?
Yeah, no, I think we've changed quite dramatically over the last 3 to 5 years, I would say, versus the rest of the world, there's one category that really springs to mind, and it's tequila. The tequila phenomenon, the tequila boom, whatever you want to call it, in the last 4 to 5 years has been something to behold. That's not necessarily been the case around the world. The US has really led that, and I think that's because of the cocktail orientation of this market. This market is a very strong cocktail, so margarita is the number one cocktail in the US. So I think tequila has had its great moment and having its moment. So our mix of product is unlike any others around the world. Tequila is, as I say, Milagro tequila in its orientation is a very different type of tequila. It tends to look at the brighter side of tequila, which is our marketing strapline, and to a colorful, vibrant, and true agave feel of tequila, which I think has stood it very well in the way that it stands out from the crowd, which can be very white, black bottles, very dark orientation, and quite morbid sometimes in the way that, tequila is marketed. Milagro stands completely away from that as the sunny side of tequila. So tequila is definitely one trend. Gin here, super premium gin, continues to flourish and grow. It's not necessarily the case around the world. And then single malts, again, have had their great moment over the last 3 years. Consumption's tightened down on single malts as people have less disposable spend, but Glenfiddich and Balvenie are doing very well in that context, both gaining market share, both two of them in the top six of the single malt whiskey brand in the US. And Glenfiddich is the world's best-selling single malt. So we do have lots of Glenfiddich around the world. But I would say probably super premium gin, probably tequila, are the two major differences in our portfolio here and our mix here versus the rest of the world.
Talent is a big part of predicting the turn. And as we talk about talent, I wanted to mention one of our sponsors, Hunt Club. Imagine the power of the best marketers in the world helping you to find your next marketing leader. That's the power of Hunt Club. Hunt Club is a new category of talent company that powers the network of experts, connectors, and business leaders to help you find the best talent. Let's face it, recruiting hasn't changed with the times. Hunt Club is changing the recruiting game by leveraging technology and crowdsource referrals to find you the best people possible for your company. Stop paying job boards that don't work or recruiting firms that recycle the same active candidates. Partner with Hunt Club.
When you look at spirits marketing, you see these trends that happen. As you mentioned, sometimes it goes up, sometimes it's go down. How are you thinking about your mix, and when do you get offensive to really push something versus when do you get defensive to try and protect a share and protect a heritage?
So we're in, as I say, the markets are up and down at the moment. A lot of the majority of categories of spirits in the US are down. American whiskey tends to be the only one that we effectively grow. The markets are normalizing post-COVID, as I say, and there's a big emergence of ready-to-drinks as well. So seltzers and those sort of brands are now really taking a push. So in that context, we're looking to entrench our positions. We have been pushing on categories that are doing well for us. So single malts have been doing well. We're investing heavily. And the one thing that William Grant does across history is when times are tough, we overinvest or we do the unpredictable. We do what everybody else is not doing. So when our P&L is under pressure, we will invest. When the market is down and trends are struggling, we will overinvest. We will innovate. And this year, in some of those difficult times, we've innovated against our Irish whiskey portfolio. Tullamore Dew is a fabulous brand that's been having a lot of success in gaining market share. And we've innovated against that. We brought a Tullamore Dew Honey variant to market in February. And that's really pushed ourselves forward in that space. So I think it depends on the opportunity per category. And the great thing is we have so many categories that are open to us that we will find something that is of interest. But as I say, we're doubling down. People are buying quality over quantity. People want to treat during tougher times. And that always remains the case. Natural human behavior is you always want to treat. And I think when spend is down or when there's an election about to happen, then people want to have something that's reassuring and is high quality. And we're playing right into that. When we do find the right opportunity, we've been innovating this year quite heavily on our Milagro brand as well. We've just launched Cristalino, which is a fabulous expression of Milagro. It's effectively an Añejo, but it's charcoal filtered to make it really smooth and clear and comes in a fantastic pack. So we invest in those kind of categories and those sort of things at the right moment, but we don't do widespread things across every portfolio. We pick and choose depending on the category type and how it's moving.
One thing I'm fascinated when I look at the company overall, when you look at most spirit companies, you go to their main company webpage and it's, here's our categories. We're in whiskey, we're in tequila, we're in gin. But William Grant, you classify as core brands, launch brands, local brands, innovation brands. What leads that choice to think not by the category, but really by the role in the portfolio?
I think it's what value it delivers to. So we know there's almost a trifecta. One is the size of the brand to the business. One is the consumer opportunity in it. And one is effectively the margin tree on that brand. So we tend to look at the brands that are strong. We tend to look at the brands that have scale because we have to protect those. Brands like Glenfiddich and Balvenie and brands like Hendrick's have lots of smaller brands coming after them because they're strong in market share. So we will always have the three of those at the head of the portfolio because A, they're a big scale to the company. B, they're synonymous with our history. And C, there's still opportunity in them. So the three of them always sit at the head of the portfolio. And then we tend to move around that and say, okay, what are the emerging categories? Irish whiskey for us is an emerging category. Tullamore Dew is an emerging category. So that's in our top five. And then effectively Milagro Tequila, again, in the US. And sometimes this view differs by country. Not every country of William Grant takes the full portfolio of our brands, but we do in the US generally have, I would say, 15, 16 of the 20 global brands. And effectively, we tend to do lots of work on that. And so Milagro and tequila is a big one. And then there's emerging categories. So we're also looking at innovation. What do we do on innovation? So we've just brought Silent Pool Gin in. We brought a brand called House of Hazelwood, which is our ancient reserve scotch, to market. And then we're looking at some of the emerging categories, whether that's non-alc, other we might not play in. But we don't rush things. And I think we stay true to the core and we keep that foundation. And the reason they're categorized like that, so the whole world has a very similar approach. And we get very strong support from the center on global assets, marketing assets in that context.
Look at the business overall. You anticipate that you're going to double the business within the next 5 years. If mm-hmm. that goes according to plan, what's that look like for the business overall?
It's a big, bold, brash plan, and it's for the US that we do that sort of innovation that sort of pioneering thinking. Globally, it looks like the fact that we will be the best drinks company in the world. That is our global ambition in the US. That then articulates to being the best drinks company in the US. And that means growing in our core five and developing our brands that go underneath that. So the big five I talked about, the challenger brands that we have underneath, things like Rake of Vodka, things like Monkey Shoulder, things like Hudson Whiskey, sit in a tier underneath the main ones, but we start to pour fuel on the fire of those alternative brands, secondary brands, core kind of foundation brands, so that we have a balanced portfolio. It's exciting. We're gonna do a lot of overinvestment in the US. Is going to be a focus market for the business, which is great. So we will get more than our fair share of the global investment, as I've already said, that's really high, because the company believe that the US is one of the big markets to invest in. The US, China, India, of three very strong markets that we want to over-articulate against, and delighted that we'll be in one of those markets. And so it's an exciting journey. I think everybody who works here feels the tangibility of that journey. The US, we will look to double. We've effectively doubled in the previous 5 years, so we have no reason to believe why we can't double in the next 5 years. Lots of change, lots of cultural change, lots of positivity around that journey.
You mentioned the cultural change there. When you are faced with this up and down of how categories are changing and things are evolving, how do you point that arrow for your team of the direction you're going and spark the culture around that common goal?
It's a great question. And it was a challenge that I had 3 years ago when I joined the business. The need to create a direction for your team, the need to have a lighthouse or a North Star or however you want to call that, as your forward view is uber critical. People need something to orientate themselves against. They need something to direct their activities against and their energies against. And so we set this vision to be to double the business and to be the best drinks company in the US. And I'm not saying just alcoholic drinks, but how can we learn from other sectors of other drinks businesses? But with that, you need to bring people with you. So we have a very strong, because ultimately those people affect the change. We have a very strong, transparent, open, directive culture. We're very sharing on what we do. We work on a no surprises basis. We effectively involve our people and every level of our business in everyday decisions or ideas. And if people have ideas, then they bring them forward. We listen to them. We consider them. We do a great reward and recognition program where we look at everybody's wins on a monthly basis and we talk about them and we share them and they get the recognition from that and some of the reward from that. So I think it just brings a positivity to everyday life for people. And if people know where they're going, if they have a leadership team that are committed to transparency and being open, and they feel motivated. And then if they're working with an amazing array of brands, it creates a great mix of things that orientates a business forward. So that's how, you know, it's effectively people affecting change. We've done a lot of transformation in that. I'm super proud of my people. I'm super proud of the step change we've made, and they've all contributed to it.
When you're working in a category that is under this constant change, how do you encourage those people in your team to really stay on top of where things are going, immerse themselves in the trend, and especially engage in a market that is as geographically diverse as something?
Geographically diverse. So I would say, first and foremost, we have to be into the data, into the details, into the nuts and bolts of the business, because things are changing weekly in these categories. Brands are cropping up weekly in these categories. So we're always on top of the data. Regionality is a huge one right now. And where people are located post-COVID is very different to where they were located pre-COVID. And I mean that in the sense of a lot of migration from big cities into states that probably didn't spike before in premium alcoholic consumption, places like South Carolina, North Carolina, Ohio, Arizona, Utah, places that were not on the map for companies in 2019 are now definitely on the map, because those consumers that move from the cities have taken their premium trends, they've taken their premium tastes, and they're wanting products like Hendrick, Glenfiddich, Balvenie in their new markets, and they want to be communicated against in those new markets. So we've had to change a complete regionality, and therefore with that comes allocation of resources, whether that's spend or people or distributor orientation. We've doubled down on that. So I think you just have to be on top of the data. You have to understand wider trends around population and demographics and economic factors. And that's how we do it. We have a great data team. We lead ourselves to opportunity through data. Then we double down on those regions where we think we've got opportunity in that context.
I think that is a perfect place to bring the conversation to a close. So thank you for taking the time.
Dave, great. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time very much.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like the show, hit that rating and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And for more resources, head over to predictingtheturn.com.